Welcome everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodrich. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who suddenly has more reasons to be jealous of Bijan Robinson, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
I mean, there are literally infinite reasons to be jealous of Bijan Robinson, the least of which not being getting an MVP painting unveiled right underneath Ricky, or, you know, having Denzel Washington flex his guns and compare them to yours and compliment the RBU factory, which, same as it ever was, looks continuing to be good. But Bijan has really, for the quiet, humble, all shucks, you know, no-drama superstar, has really slid into the celebrity life pretty well here.
I mean, it pays to have a good agent and an agent that has floor-side seats to the Lakers, right? Like, it just, you know, those are important things to have in going on in your life, especially when you're a 21-year-old millionaire who has a completely guaranteed contract. Bijan, if you missed it, hanging out with celebs at the Laker game, took a selfie with Adele, which honestly made my wife jealous as well, of both of them, really, let's be honest here, and also had a conversation with Denzel Washington about how Texas continues to churn out running backs. Kids live in the dream, and I'm just so happy. Happy for the kid. But we're not here to talk about Bijan, even though we could and we have. We're going to talk about baseball and some championship. Teams are making championship runs. Texas, on a couple of standards, won a championship or a few championships this weekend, have you. But we've got a lot to talk about. We'll start with the baseball team. The Texas Longhorns, top seeded in the Big 12 tournament, starting the day you're listening to this on Wednesday, taking on Kansas at 12:30, earned the top seed by coming out and doing what they needed to, sweeping West Virginia in, it wasn't even dramatic fashion. Texas really didn't ever feel like this was that close.
I don't know if people listen to this podcast for us to speak things into existence. Obviously, there's a long and documented history of a phenomenon known as Podstradamus. We didn't explicitly called it out, but we did take time on our last week's preview. We waited a day to get it out, obviously, with foresight, so that it could come out midweek for a Thursday starting series. And we laid out the path that Texas would need to take to win a Big 12 championship. And by God, they clearly listened. I don't know that we explicitly said just get after them early and often. Texas dominated in first innings of this entire series. Chasing their ace in the first inning was wild. You know, West Virginia had two all-conference pitchers, and Texas got the better of both of them. It looked a little interesting. We talked about how West Virginia was kind of changing up their rotation a little bit, playing it a little bit safe, just needing one win to secure the conference championship outright. They couldn't get that because Texas's bats were in fuego.
We talked about it in last week's preview of the series, right? Like, West Virginia very clearly was putting all their baskets in that Saturday game, right? They didn't pitch their normal Friday guy on Thursday, and that guy got absolutely demolished, made it just 1 2/3 innings, gave up 5 hits, 5 earned runs. Texas all over him, hit Downtown Brown home runs in that one. And then they, again, like we said, they seemed to put a lot of their eggs in the Friday basket, which was their Saturday starter. And Blaine Traxel went 5 innings, but gave up 8. Didn't really have the outing they wanted to. And so going into the Saturday game where they pitched their ace, Ben Hampton, Texas was feeling itself. Texas was hyped. And there's something to be said for, like, not letting a team feel like they can do it, and especially a talented team, a young team like Texas. Like, if you had put them out of their misery on Thursday, you might have just ended the thing with a sweep and really been about it. But West Virginia decided to, you know, kind of sacrifice the Thursday night Friday didn't go their way, and then it's all the pressure is on Ben Hampton. Texas is playing a little loose, right? Texas is able to come in and just have fun and play some fun baseball and chase West Virginia's ace after a third of an inning.
Yeah.
I say a third of an inning loosely because there were a lot of at-bats, but he only recorded a single out.
Texas is a bit of a vibes team, a bit of a momentum team, right? Like, you don't want to let a team with bats like this see the ball, feel like they can do it. Like, each game they grew in confidence. They after the downtown Porter Brown triple dinger dandy, which sounds
nice.
Yeah, thank you. Sounds like a radio program from the 40s. But starting it off on Thursday and putting up 12 runs, and they get double digits against Traxel, right? The guy who, I think I said in the preview, had 20 more innings than any other pitcher in the Big 12 because he just threw complete games. They didn't have to take him out, right? He was a great pitcher all year, and they were able to get up on him. Then all of a sudden, now they're at the top of the slope, skis pointed down, momentum, nothing to lose. I think it was an interesting call from their manager, and definitely it turned out in the Horns' favor. Everything that needed to happen did happen. OU giving us a little bit of an assist. We'll thank them for that. Honestly, in going to the SEC, we can agree to hate each other when we play each other and hate each other less when we're not. So I, there's a weird kind of forged through fire, weak alliance. This feels very much like a mid-90s Raw is War alliance where, one's going to instantly turn heel on the other and hit him with a chair from behind. But there's a loose alliance. Appreciate OU with the assist, getting enough wins over Oklahoma State to allow Texas into this one and ultimately to the number one seed in the tournament this weekend and a share of the Big 12 title. We talked about bats. It would be remiss not to talk about Lucas Gordon. Was elite Friday. You knew that would come. LeBaron Johnson has been absolutely in fuego on Saturday. And, if you're looking towards a hot team, Texas won their last five heading into the Big 12 tournament. The pitching being where it is phenomenal. And then Tanner Witt, like, he keeps adding pitches each start. And this one really looked like glimpses of his old self, which is scary for other teams having to face this Texas team in the postseason.
Yeah, if Tanner Witt has his curveball, it's a winning proposition for Texas. And I, jokingly tweeted a Lord of the Rings meme of Gandalf coming to the rescue over the hills, and that's Tanner Witt in the month of May. But we have to talk about LeBaron Johnson. Like, you and I, and we talked about this last week too, like, you and I have had our doubts about LeBaron Johnson and in a lot of ways for good reason. And over his last five starts, 7 earned runs, 40 strikeouts, essentially half, 40 of his 84 strikeouts this year have come in his last five starts. Like, guy is finding it and feeling it. And if he can keep that, I don't expect him to average that many strikeouts per game or have like multiple double digit strikeout games like he has recently. But like, the dude is finding his stride. He's figured it out. And I think if Texas has this trio of guys going, they're going to be tough to beat. And there's something to be said about finding momentum, finding your rhythm toward the late season. Texas now has put itself in position to win a couple of games in the Big 12 tournament and ultimately get a regional hosting spot.
Yeah, there's a lot of predictions floating out. I just want to see the games. I want to see them make a run in this tournament and get that hosting spot. But I did just want to say, I think, as one LBJ's powers seem to wane with LeBron being swept out of the Western Conference Finals, a new LBJ assumes some of that latent power. And it couldn't come at a better time. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. This season closed out the regular season with some interesting numbers, Gerald. When we lost all of the firepower, not just the Melendez, but all of the firepower that we did last year setting home run records, I don't think anyone really thought that this team would hit as well as they did. And they started by confirming our worst fears. They showed up. 83 homers is the second most in program history, only obviously after last season's record. No one really saw that coming. One guy who has been the glue through many, many years, Eric Kennedy, moved up with a home run in this weekend to number 10th all-time in UT career home run leaders with 30. But, I mean, pitching defense, the things we weren't sure about, they shored up through the season. They show up in the numbers, leading the Big 12 in both of those. I mean, it's a complete team. as long as they can have their starters go deep and not have to get too reliant on a bullpen, which is every team in America, they're as good as anyone in the country right now.
When you say that, Texas won some awards to prove that. Lucas Gordon, for his efforts, Big 12 Pitcher of the Year. Texas had 8 named to an all-Big 12 team, including a conference-leading 5 on the first team. Gordon, Guillemette, Downtown, Porter Brown, Dylan Campbell, and LBJ all made the first team. Peyton Powell on the second team. Eric Kennedy, Jared Thomas on the honorable mention team. The Snake Farm made the all-freshman team. Texas had, 4 first-team all-conference guys that ended up going to the MLB draft last year. So hopefully there's not as massive an exodus of the all-conference guys this offseason. But this, you and I, and I'll just go and put us out there. We, among a lot of other people, said this was going to be a rebuild year. And in a rebuild year, Texas won its share of a conference championship, was one conference game away from winning it outright. Granted, they were also one conference loss for finishing 4th. We're not going to talk about that, right? We're going to talk about how it could have gone the other way. But if this is a rebuilding year for David Pierce, there was a contingent of Texas fans that wanted to fire him after the OU sweep. They were rightfully frustrated. But yeah. It's hard to argue with the result of Texas hoisting a crystal ball the second weekend in May.
I didn't write it down in the notes. I looked it up after the third game. I apologize. I think it's 11-3 since that OU game. Texas, with Pierce going, full Popovich, as it's been described, full Serbian. Pierce going similar, nuclear on the team. It seemed to have worked. He went full Augie, if you've seen the famous Augie documentary. I won't quote it because I can't. This is a family show. But whatever Pierce said seemed to have worked to snap this team in. And look, I mean, you said it. I do think 4 players who were all first team getting drafted last year is why we said 13 players total leaving who contributed is why we said this is going to be a rebuild year. But credit to Coach Pierce when you just reload a little bit, right? We knew the talent was there, but it took some coaching. It took some close ones. They lost some close ones. They had some tough stretches during the season, but at the end of it, you get to a Big 12 championship, potentially hosting a regional, all your goals still in play and momentum at the right time. It looks good, and you have to give credit to Pierce for that. Managing a baseball team is not easy. It's not linear. There's ups, there's downs, there's injuries, there's momentum swings, and he managed it pretty well, I would say, to get to his ultimate destination this year. And that's even with Jared Thomas obviously making the all-freshman team. We said on our preview, I specifically remember, we would only finish top 3 or top 2 and be in the hunt if the freshmen on the corners were otherworldly. And Jared Thomas made the all-freshman team. But I think there's another level for Jalen Flores, who could be a guy who's first team all Big 12. He has the talent to next year. He's kind of been coming on late in the season. So there's still levels to this team, even as some of the older guys graduate. And from this team in this class, there is development, and there is a factory line here kind of mindset, which is exactly what you expect with the University of Texas baseball.
So Texas squaring off against Kansas. Basically, by the time you're done listening to this podcast, they'll be throwing out the first pitch 12:30 against the Jayhawks. Again, Texas put itself in position to potentially host a regional. If they can get a couple of wins in the Big 12 tournament, they'll likely have a lock for that. They'll take on the winner or the loser of Kansas State TCU, depending on how that goes. So that's the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. And we're really just going to cross the street, hop, skip, and a jump over to Red and Charlie McCombs and talk about the softball team doing what it needs to do, hosting a regional of Seton Hall, Texas A&M, and Texas State. And outside of the Saturday, it was a tight one on Saturday, but really not a ton of sweating outside of a couple of innings against Texas A&M on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, the pitchers showed up in this one. I think a combined no-hitter, 4 innings from Mac Morgan and 1 from Estelle Check in that Seton Hall win comfortably in 5. Texas A&M again, 2-1. That's a pitcher's duel, and if Texas is winning those, I feel pretty good about a team that we know can hit very well, young but talented with the bat. So all the way through, and then just knocking Texas A&M out of the postseason felt nice. You had the requisite horns down that were replayed back to them. I don't know, Gerald. It feels like as we play the Aggies again, I remember. In various sports, I remember how much I hate the Aggies again. I hate OU, and they're our rival, but it almost feels like you know, like Mrs. Dorothy Mantooth, or, you know, but by God, I respect them. I just don't respect Aggies. I just can't find it in me to respect them at all.
I get that your person hit a home run, hit a two-run home run to close the gap to six. Like that, like, I'm fine. Get hyped for your people, but just, like, know that that's the only reason you didn't get run ruled. Like, that's what you're celebrating. If Texas was up by eight, if they hadn't scored those two runs, Texas ends the game early and sends you back to College Station with a horribly embarrassing black eye in that one. But, like, Texas was all over A&M early in that game. Texas was all over Seton Hall early on Friday. And, you know, on Saturday, A&M took the lead 1-0, and then Texas was like, nope, taking it right back. Mm-hmm. So, like, again, for all of the talk of what this regional could be, you know, I said it on the BON roundtable, right? If Texas played like they did against Oklahoma State and not like they did against Baylor, they should have a pretty solid and pretty easy outing. Now, they're not going to have an easy outing this coming weekend. They're heading to Knoxville to take on Tennessee, who absolutely just blasted everyone in their regional.
Yeah, it's the rivalry that no one talks about, the battle for the UT, the block T, and which shade of orange we've talked about many times on this podcast. You're riding for Pantone. I can't remember what it is, but the burnt one. So there are a lot to play for. In addition to getting through the super regional, you gotta rep which UT is the best. Everyone in Austin, everyone listening to this podcast knows the answer to that.
So it's Mike White's 13th straight super regional. If they can get to that, if they can get 2 out of 3 wins in Knoxville, they'll head to Oklahoma City for the NCAA Women's College World Series. The Texas men, their big run ended early at the hands of what? Not West Virginia.
What sport? It's not West Virginia. It's just Virginia.
Yeah, they should be UVA.
Yeah, and it's, you didn't say which sport. You just said the men.
Oh. A team whose NCAA tournament run unfortunately ended, number one men's tennis, fell in the Final Four to number 5 UVA, 4-1. Texas dropped the doubles point, and it really just seemed like they were having an off outing. You know, Texas dropped 3 of the 4 matches that finished. They were down in 2 of the others that didn't finish. It was just one of those. Every team has those afternoons, and it just turned out that this one was against one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, you get to the Final Four, anything can happen. You know, a lot of talk was about Texas being the number one seed and the likely competitor in the championship game would either be Ohio State, who they, you know, had lost to in the indoors, and redeemed by beating them, who were number one at the time, or TCU, who had beat them once and they redeemed by beating them when they were number one. So the narrative was written that it would be some combination of those three teams playing each other for the championship. I don't think that got to the players' head that they were looking past this one. I really don't. I just think credit to the UVA team. They showed up and played like they're one of the best teams in the country, and they want and deserve to be, you know, national champions. So good on them. Never be, you know, too sad about a top four, I guess technically tied for third finish. But man, it felt like there was a national championship to be had there with the talent on this team.
Yeah, they definitely were on the cusp. It's also going to hurt in the Director's Cup. I think Texas needed that 100 points. Granted, finishing tied for third is not a bad outing for the Director's Cup, but that big hundy would have been nice.
87, so it's a B+, I guess is how you would say that.
It's a tight race with Stanford. Every point counts at this mm-hmm. point. We're going to need rowing to get its 100, or it's might be a bad year, second place finish for Texas. On the links, number 11 women's golf makes it 2 after a record-setting 12 under 276 in the second round. They match up with A&M in the Elite 8, the Final 8, and fall in the match play to, unfortunately, Texas A&M. I think it's the Aggies' only win over Texas this academic year. They got one in, like, right under mm-hmm. the wire. I think Texas A&M and OU are combined, like, 4 in a million against Texas this year.
Legitimately, I think the softball sweep in this A&M one are the only 4 games, and it's got to be double digits. Texas this still owns the title of postseason. They knocked the Aggies out of, obviously, softball we just talked about, and don't forget soccer as well back in the fall semester. So they still hold postseason wins as well as overall wins on the year. Unfortunate to go down to the Aggies. I really want to focus more on the run, right? They're number 11. They ended up with the 2 seed, right? They played so well in stroke play, where Texas historically always is a match play team on the men's and women's side. If they can get to match play, you feel good about them winning. This one, when they went that well in stroke play, it's almost uncharted territory. Obviously, you knew Stanford, phenomenal, just absolutely phenomenal, was going to get the number 1 seed. Texas out here breaking records and still was the 2 seed. That it's a program record for 18 holes at an NCAA championship, that 12 under, tied for the 12th best round in program history at any round played, tied for the 2nd best team round in the NCAA championship history amongst all schools. So you can put up something that's the 2nd best round that any team's ever done, ever, at the NCAA championships and still get the number 2 seed. It's tough. And look, Angela Hia was a big part of that. Her 6-under-66 par was the best individual round in school history at the NCAA championships, tied for the 6th best score ever in Longhorn women's golf history. So she was on fire, obviously came back to earth a little bit. I think that was a big part of it, right? Is you have, she finished tied 37th, but you have someone who's that hot for one round. It almost, you know, golf's an interesting game. You either stay hot and you're a supernova, Scottie Scheffler, the past couple of years, but really most people, you're that good, there is a come down that's precipitous. It's almost better to have a pretty good and then a very good. When you're that hot one time, you know, it can come back to hurt. But Cindy Hugh was tied 10th. Sophie Guo and Bo Park tied 21 and tied 31st in the individual standing. So everyone good, and we know this is a young team with a bunch of freshmen all around it. So this was a great finish for them, punching above their weight to get that 2 seed, unfortunately, to fall in the final 8.
I mean, we've seen what the ceiling of this team can be. So it's I don't want to be presumptive, but it feels like this is a team that's going to compete for national championships for several years to come, because it's a really young team. And again, they set a school record with a bunch of freshmen out there. So it's going to be interesting to see how they develop over the next few years and have the opportunity to continue to compete and show out for his efforts to get Texas to where it is. Women's golf coach Ryan Murphy was named to the WGCA National Coach of the Year watch list. Big honor just to be mentioned. Hopefully he can bring it home. Generally it goes to somebody that's one of the finalists in the NCAA tournament usually, but he's done a heck of a job this year, and hopefully he's recognized for his efforts. Tyrese Hunter is coming back for another one for the 2023-2024 season. Texas needs some help in the backcourt, and well, Tyrese Hunter, we've seen what he can do. We know what he can do. He's really good at the basketball. So Texas still probably has a couple of holes in that backcourt specifically, but I think getting Hunter back goes a long way to making me feel a little bit better about what 2023-2024 will be.
They're replacing a lot, as we know. No way to get Serge Ibari Rice back for a 12th year. I wish. By the way, he's killing it. Got invited to the combine this week. Has been just, you know, what people have said about Roschon Johnson. You've seen a little bit of teams really fall in love with Serge Ibari Rice. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. On this one, on Hunter, I mean, you're getting a guy who really heated up at the end of the last season. I think he averaged just about 12 points a game and 40% from three over the last 11 games of the season on that run to the Big 12 tournament title and the Elite Eight. Basically, if you get that Hunter, and then, you know, if he can have that type of efficiency and can shoot the ball that well, in addition to really being the focal point of the offense, it's really interesting where his ceiling can be, because the talent is there. There's no doubt about it. He's going to assume his duties plus Marcus Carr's. I do think there's another guard still coming in the portal. My gut tells me there's someone else, but nonetheless, it's going to be heavy on Mr. Hunter next season.
A couple of big names out there that Texas is courting, potentially a kid from North Carolina, and a guy who didn't get into Michigan. Stop me when you heard that before. Had an admissions issue with Michigan and may end up in Texas helping the Longhorns out. Yeah, Texas courting a couple of potential big-ish names in the portal, so we'll see. Maybe Michigan's admissions will help Texas out yet again, this time on the basketball court, not on the football field. And just a quick preview, this is championship week for Texas. So we mentioned the team tennis. The men's and women's individuals are going all week. Kyle will have an update for you there. Track and field, the NCAA prelims start today, Wednesday, run through Friday. Again, softball is in the Super Regionals Friday through Sunday. Rowing championships, same span, as well as the men's golf championships. Texas has an opportunity to keep these runs going and maybe bring home some hardware in the process.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a few teams who are favored there, rowing in particular, track and field, women's track and field to you know, keep their number one spot and bring home a title. But you know, any of these teams could get hot. There's all top 10 teams around there and bring home. And we'll start our next segment, Gerald. Let's jump right into it. Let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. 8 teams with NCAA top 5 finishes this year. 10 in the top 10. Top 10 Texas 10 times over this year. With a few still competing, baseball, softball, track, men's golf, as we just said. So chance to you know, shore up those Director's Cup points. UT won 12 Big 12 titles, baseball being the 12th. One off their record of 13. Just a reminder that Texas is the only school in league history to win at least 12 Big 12 titles in a season. And they've done it 6 times. We run this conference. Gerald, are you there? By the way, your video went off. Just making sure. Okay, cool. It's no worries. Just making sure.
Weird.
I can't trace if you're going to jump in or not.
No, yeah, let me jump. I didn't realize my video was off. My bad. Yeah, so like I... obviously, we want Texas to obviously, we want Texas to compete in the big ones. Obviously, football, right? Basketball are the ones that everybody talks about. But like, when push comes to shove, Texas has been really incredible across all the sports, and that's why I think it's fun to tout like these Director's Cup wins, because it's not just football and basketball. These other athletes are out there doing what they do and putting in the blood, sweat, and tears, just like the football and basketball guys are. So like, it's great to see that baseball is getting its recognition and getting their flowers. And you know, the ladies' teams have really carried Texas in a lot of ways for the last several years. So it's awesome to see that. And again, hopefully they can bring home at least another conference tournament this year.
In a piece that doesn't count towards the Director's Cup, but still, you know, really incredible regardless, we had some national champions in this individual space last year. The tennis individuals, Gerald alluded to, on the men's side, we've had a good showing just today right before we recorded. I was updating this live. I don't even think it's been pushed out online yet. But juniors Elliot Spezieri and Micah Braswell each earned straight set victories in the first and second rounds to advance to the round of 16 in the singles championship. So they are 2 of the 16 left. Number 1 seeded Spezieri won easily over his number 51 and 49. Braswell might be the sneaky dark horse of this tournament. He was an alternate, got in just because there was an open spot. He had been hurt all year. He'd been ranked as high as number 30, but because of his injury, is unranked in this tournament. But he's been on fire. He was named the only person on the team side to the all-tournament team after winning everything through there. He actually beat the number 6 seed in the opener in straight sets, and then the round of 32 over the number 30 seed. Hasn't dropped a set in 7 wins since he's come back from injury. So he's come back with a vengeance. Yeah, nice. And just the other bit of news closing that out, CM Uliab had a nice one, his third top 12 of win of the year against number 12 in the opening round, but did just before we recorded this podcast fall in the round of 32. Our guy PYB fell to number 16 also in the opening round. Keeping it country club, Scottie Scheffler finished second at the PGA Tour Championship. Wild one. Most of the eyes were on PGA Tour Pro Block Nation, the blockheads coming out for one of the craziest, like, instantly 30 for 30 all-time sports stories. It's too cheesy if you write in a movie. Rounds, but quietly and sneakily, Scottie Scheffler hung around third place, then second place, ended up just, I believe, 2 shots behind eventual champion, but had a rough second day, but was able to recover. Otherwise, we might be talking about another win for Scottie. But, you know, top 2 finishes, that's how you keep your world ranking.
I mean, there was a lot of storylines. The LIV Golf guys were there trying to win some things as well. So there was a lot of different storylines. And again, it's always great when Texas centers itself in the conversation.
Back to a guy who's been in a lot of conversations, reigning Golden Spikes and National Player of the Year, Ivan Melendez, has his own little hit streak. Saw Dylan Campbell extend his to 33 games and said, okay, you want to be the big shot? Try to take Melendez's flowers? He's currently on a 14-game hitting streak at High A Hillsboro. Had a couple Titanic homers in that stretch. Looked like him old self. I'm excited to see Melendez make it to the MLB. I think he's going to be a monster and a fan favorite just with what he can do hitting the baseball.
Tuesday night hit his seventh dinger in the last 11 games, doing what he does best, putting them over the wall.
Just a hit streak where you hit dingers. That's the easiest way to make them not catch it, is by hitting it over the fence behind them. Simple logic, works every time. Men's golf's Brian Stark elected to return for the 23-24 season. This news came before the postseason, which I like to see. He's locked in for this postseason, but he already knows he's going to run it back. Already a grad transfer, played 3 years at Oklahoma State and grad transferred to Texas for his fourth year of eligibility. So he's taking now his COVID year at Texas. You'd obviously want an extra year if you can get it at Texas versus in Stillwater.
You know what? Texas needs more great golfers. He's sitting number 39 in the world amateur golf ranking. So, like, again, Texas is reloading that team, and it's good to have an elder statesman on the links.
Always good to have elder statesmen, especially with as many freshmen as they have. Men's and women's golf team both have very young teams, so playing with house money this year for both of them. Swimming, just quickly, 5 medals at the 2023 USA Diving National Championship with spots on Team USA at stake. Two people who qualified for Team USA, Haley Hernandez, is the national, or I guess the gold medals national championship in the 1 meter springboard. The silver went to Nick Harris in the 3 meter synchronized. Both of those will auto qualify for the 2023 Team USA this summer. Bronze, Bridget O'Neill in the 1 meter, 10 meter platform, Jordan Skilkin, and the 3 meter mixed synchronized of Bridget O'Neill and Noah Duperry. They will be potentials. So first two are auto qualify. And just because 5 is not enough, Haley Hernandez and Bridget O'Neill will dive when you listen to this Wednesday in the women's 3 meter final. So potential for more medals.
By the way, not that Nick Harris, different Nick Harris.
Wouldn't that be something? That's a visual. Guys, I'm leaving to work for the Dallas Cowboys and be a professional diver. I got to get that out of my head. Number 10/1 men's and women's track earns 3 Big 12 end of year honors. No surprise here. Coach Eldrick Florial wins his 5th straight Big 12 Women's Coach of the Year award. Turn that thing into a machine. Speaking of no surprise, Julian Alfred, maybe the most dominant, if you were to do a current Mount Rushmore of UT athletes, is as good as anyone on campus is, I think the most dominant currently, wearing burnt orange as a undergrad. Julian Alfred was named the Women's Big 12 Performer of the Year for the second straight season. Gerald, had she done anything of note this year?
Undefeated in the 100 meter, including the fastest all conditions time in NCAA history at 10.72, set a world leading time in the 200, was part of a couple of record setting relay races. Like, you know, nothing major, nothing big.
Yeah, set once and then again the 4x1, the 4x4 as well. 11 time All-American Julian Alfred, looking to add to those. She's just on another planet right now. A guy who's coming into his own of being a Longhorn great, Jeremiah Nubby, was named the male outstanding freshman of the year after a sport that just doesn't get enough love. The Big 12 hammer throw champion broke a 22-year program record this year at Texas Relays. Love to see it. Love to see on the men's side the continued tradition of big guys who throw things far, of the Papiris and Kraus, etc.
Track and field is more fun for me when Texas has a massive human throwing stuff.
Agree with you. Number 2, rowing's Kate Nifton was named the Big 12 Rower of the Year. Dave O'Neill won his 7th Coach of the Year award in 8 seasons. Almost ho-hum, but I'll take it. I like ho-hum dominance. It's rowing team's good. And Gerald, this one, I'll just tee up and let you kind of talk a little bit about. But we had some tough news for Longhorn Nation this week as well.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, on Sunday evening, former Texas Longhorn Jaden Hullaby was reported missing on Sunday night by his uncle, and they'd been looking for him for a little bit. And then Monday morning, unfortunately, his younger brother, who's enrolled at Texas Tech, announced that they had found him, and Jade was unfortunately had passed away. And so we're 21. Is like way too young. I can't imagine what his parents and his brother are going through. Like hug your kids, hug your loved ones. Like tell them don't leave anything unsaid. Like tell them you love them every day and hug them. Don't go to bed angry. Like it's just not worth it.
Yeah, the we think of these kids as players, and we knew him as a high school recruit out of Mansfield, a guy who came to Texas, redshirted 1 year, played 1 year. Transferred to New Mexico, and then his younger brother, who you know ended up going to Tech, was a Texas lean. So the Hullabies have been around the UT football program, and if you know, again, not a direct contributor this season, a Longhorn for life, a part of the Longhorn family forever. Just devastatingly sad. And this Gerald said, "Let this be a reminder to just after you listen to this podcast, text somebody you love." That you love him. Give somebody you love a hug if you're near him. Never have enough of those reminders for sure. But Gerald, let's bring it back up on a little bit of a brighter note. What have you been watching on your giant screen? Let's go to Godzillatron.
Might not be much of an upper as well. It's fine. But so it was after returning to form last week, as you so happily reminded me, I had a very, very nerdy watching week. So my wife and I have been in the middle of packing. We're getting ready to move. And so we missed the premiere. Went and saw the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 over the weekend. And I don't know how to say that, like, I was emotionally damaged by a big chunk of that film, and I don't know if I'll ever fully recover. I never thought that a motion capture raccoon voiced by Bradley Cooper would be so emotionally affecting, but it actually was, and it got me in a lot of ways. If animal cruelty is something that is triggering for you, skip that movie. Like, don't watch it. Just watch it, like, or watch it when it comes to Disney Plus so you can fast forward through it. It was really, really, it was an incredible movie. Don't get me wrong, but like, I was not expecting the raccoon movie to make me sad, and it made me very sad in a lot of places. But a really beautiful story about resilience and love and like what family is and how family can look different to different people, but all in all, just what matters is the relationship between you and the choices you make in regards to the people around you. So it's really, really incredible. I really enjoyed it. It's so, so good. And then I also watched the Dungeons and Dragons movie, which is streaming. Didn't get to see that one in theaters. And I was made to love that movie. Like, it's everything I love in the world. But my wife actually, I think, liked it more than I did. And she is decidedly not a nerd. It was great. It didn't help that the really handsome guy from the first season of Bridgerton had like a big chunk of that film dedicated basically to him, which that's like her bread and butter is like, you know, handsome, dark skinned men with British accents is like she would leave me for him and I wouldn't blame her. Right. Him, Idris Elba. There, she's gone, but it's fine. No, but it was like dumb fun. It was super, like, it had enough like normal stuff to let normal people like enjoy it, but also enough of like nerdy deep cuts and references to like, they had like the fight scenes lasted in like 6 second increments because that's how long a round of combat goes in Dungeons and Dragons. Like, it was just really, really interesting to see how they did it. It was, you know, it was just a love letter to that. I wish it had made more money so it would have gotten a sequel, but it was way better than it should be. And like, Chris Pine was charming as all get out. Like, it's hard not to like it.
Two thoughts. Can't wait till Gerald opens up next week's podcast with a, "Right, bruv, horns up, isn't it, for baseball?" Trying on his British-ist of accents. And also, I did not watch John Wick for multiple years because of a dog dying triggering the series. So we'll see if I get to that Guardians of the Galaxy. I can't do it. I cried far more at my dog Skip than any of the devastating war movies I've watched over the years. Don't do the animal stuff. But Gerald, speaking of animalistic, you're not going to catch up, I don't believe, unless you're doing some Herculean effort that I'm unaware of. to succession in real time, right? You're a few seasons behind.
We are a few seasons behind.
Yeah, a good friend of the podcast, Mario, is probably lapping you, but is not going to catch up either. So I have a lack of people to talk about succession in real time, right? I remember we had a fantastic group chat, and as you know, Gerald had a nerd podcast called Two Woke Nerds, where I went on and talked about Game of Thrones as well. And so getting to the finale of that season, whether you know you loved it or hated it, and I think most fall into the latter camp, it is still an event of a finale. It's weird because Succession had their penultimate episode this week, and next week will be the finale. And it's weird I don't have as many people to talk about it live. So if you're caught up and you want to talk, slide into the DMs. Let's chat about it. It's very good. There was I won't spoil anything. There was kind of election time has factored into the past two episodes. There was a big event episode for the penultimate with a lot of people in the same room, and it was really, really good. Like some people just out here just making tape for award season, just putting on incredible performances all around for the Roy kids. If you're up on Succession, let's chat about it. The other thing I listened to this week, not watch, was Slow Burn, which is a Slate podcast. I think there's like six seasons. I'd listened to the Watergate one, but I think that's the only one I had listened to. So I started the kind of Monica Lewinsky scandal event podcast, which the whole point of Slow Burn is they take an event that happened, really go into the details, you know, for someone who was younger when that happened, missed a lot of it, a lot of the pre-Lewinsky scandals, the players who were involved, you know, the motivations of some of the people, both on the Clinton side and in their team and in their, you know, foes. And it was an interesting, I'm only, I think, four episodes in, and there's seven, I believe, something like that, or six. So let's call it somewhere around halfway, maybe three or four out of seven. It's interesting because I think from being a punchline in the 90s, before we had the rich vocabulary and the Me Too movement and ways to kind of talk about women and sexual relationships and the way that we, you know, just victimize, or, you know, actually the opposite of victimized, just make the women the problem. It's been an interesting listen as our culture has shifted, as I've been older, as we've had different political discourse in the past 20 years, some of the seeds of things that were sown during that have, you know, infiltrated our politics in the, you know, ensuing decades since. It's interesting to go back to a different, simpler, but still kind of dark and seedy time. And it's been a really entertaining, sometimes tough hang, but again, as someone who was young and missed a lot of the nuance, it's been a pretty fantastic kind of relive as I dive into that. So I'd recommend it for anyone about our age. If you're, you know, between, let's call it 27 and 45, you can, or, you know, 40, you can probably get a lot out of this, as you may not have grasped everything as the first time around. But even if you did, it's still really good with some unearthed detail.
I love examining those types of things, like as an adult, like stuff that we were just kind of like hearing through our parents or like through random snippets of my dad watching the news. Like, it's always fun and interesting for me to go back and hear those things. So it's actually on my, it's on my to listen list. I've got a long drive coming up here in a couple of weeks, so I will, it'll probably be on tap for that. One, that's the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I am always proud of the University of Texas and our academic prowess. There's a reason we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz, and it is because we're nerds. In the sense that, you know, Gerald loves comic books, but we both, you know, really value our education at the University of Texas and scholarly pursuits and intellectual podcasts and discussions and all of those things, right? We love sports, but we like the brainy part of it as well. And I think that's why a lot of people are drawn to the University of Texas. It is the perfect blend of brain and brawn. We just spent an hour talking about all the great sports. One thing that maybe is my most exciting thing of the week. Dr. Luis Caffarelli won the Abel Prize this week, which is the math equivalent of the Nobel Prize, or for you sports heads, the math equivalent of the Heisman. I'm kidding.
the math equivalent of the Naismith.
That's correct. That's correct. He's the first Latin American mathematician to win the prize, the second Texas professor in the last 4 years to win the prize. His work focuses on partial differential equations, which, you know, Gerald and I are big on, free boundary problems, which help calculate and stimulate real-world phenomena, which, again, is like how we spend our spare time. This is right up our... Actually, not. None of that makes a lot of sense to me. I do watch Marvelous Miss Maisel, where her father is a mathematician professor at Columbia and one of these big brain fellows. So really without jokes, because he deserves much, much better than that. Like, huge... horns up and hook him to Dr. Luis Caffarelli for just, you know, it's so cool that our staff, our professors, our distinguished alumni, these people are going out in the world, winning incredible awards, changing the world. What starts here changes the world. I hope all of you are as proud about these awards as all the athletic ones we've listed off in the 50 minutes prior.
Yeah, I mean, he's like working on how to calculate like ice melting, which is a, you know, prescient thing nowadays. But I'm bringing the drum this week on people who are doing dumb work. And that is our national legislature. This is not political, but you can call it whatever you want. There has been new legislation introduced around NIL, and there's a lot of terrible things tied up in it. But basically the new NIL legislation would obviously like create some sort of national framework and regulatory body around collectives and boosters and endorsement deals. But the things that in it that are terrible for both student athletes and the sport overall is it builds in some protection for the NCAA if things go sideways, and classifies that athletes cannot be employees, which would then eliminate them from unionizing and going into any sort of collective labor situation that would ultimately get them some of the billions and billions of dollars that are being made by the conferences off of their backs. And yes, NIL is bridging that gap, but when we're talking about a Ford Lightning versus a nine-figure TV deal, there's a little bit of a gap between that. You know, Texas and OU are pulling in eight figures with the new SEC media rights deal. So, yeah, Bijan gets a Lambo, but the university gets the gross domestic product of some small countries. So the athletes losing that ability, you know, and even it goes down to things like, you know, healthcare and things like that that could potentially be part of it. And I know people are worried about college sports being professionalized and that type of thing and turning it into an amateur league. It's been that for a long time. It has been, and it has, I mean, as somebody who walked through the parking garages following games and witnessed $100 handshakes happening, these things have been happening for decades. And so getting the NIL rules out there is the right thing to do, and it allows athletes to do this in a way that should be and could be less predatory. And I think regulations do need to be had, but the NCAA throwing up its hands and letting the U.S. government get involved in this is absolutely the wrong decision. The NCAA has been and seems like will continue to be a really ineffective governing body. And I really, really hope that the SEC and Big Ten put a knife in its ribs sooner rather than later.
I am absolutely shocked that our legislators missed the mark on something, also specifically when it comes to posturing around collegiate athletics, as we saw when, you know, anytime there was conference realignment. College athletics is such an interesting, like, bravado point for these legislators. You know, if, no, Baylor has to stay in the Big 12. Well, Texas Tech can't get out of this TV rights. It's just crazy how we link those two and how sadly it's become necessary to do that. It's fine, though. It's a step in the right direction. We knew it wouldn't be perfect when you involve two bodies of ineptitude, the NCAA and the legislators of the U.S. government.
And that's all we've got for you this week. On that note, Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me at Anarchy Today. No, I kid. You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodridge. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. We're a few weeks out from our season previews. We're excited doing something different with that. But we'll be back next week, hopefully doing a little bit of recruiting preview. So we'll get you queued up for all the big visits coming in the month of June. And then obviously we'll jump into our big season preview. Thank you so much for tuning in again. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Titletown, USA.